Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013.
Damn. This is one of the longest relationships I've ever had. Just keep going.
You know what, Bill? This is like the longest stretch I've done anything consistently in my life.
We're not even getting paid for it.
Yeah, I know. That's really saying something, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah, we should go on strike, but no one would listen.
I'm quitting the podcasters union that I'm not a part of, but yeah.
Local 69. Fuck you, I'm out.
Solidarity.
Yeah.
In any case, yeah, this podcast goes back a long way. Billy and I are, you know, just kind of sitting on the porch in rocking chairs, drinking sweet tea and watching the world go by lately.
Fuck that. Damn.
But this evening's show is a special show.
Is it? It is.
It is our 350th, my God, episode.
Yeah! Yeah! I'm all screamed out.
I want to scream like that when live music comes back.
Oh,
I would be screaming my freaking lungs out.
Soon, Johnny, soon. Hang in there, buddy. We're almost there.
Yeah. In any case, it's episode 350, and as we are wont to do at these sort of milestones,
mm-hmm.
we like to sit back, perhaps relax a little bit, and take a break from our genre of choice. In the past, I know we've talked about like action movies.
Yep.
We've talked about other genres
mm-hmm.
that we like to sort of change things up a bit.
Absolutely.
And tonight we are going to be talking not really about movies at all, though that might wind its way into the conversation. We're going to be talking about our relationships with cartoons, comic books, graphic novels. Billy and I are both fans of one or all of those types of, medium. So, yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about. I know it's kind of the chic thing these days, or probably for the last 20 years. You know, comic book movies have been a huge thing, so. You know,
for several reasons.
Yeah. And yeah, so maybe we could start off, Bill, with I'm always curious to hear about people's origins of, you know, well, what got them into a certain kind of music or a mm-hmm. certain author or something like that. What was your kind of entryway into getting into comics, cartoons, what have you?
Sure. Comic books, cartoons are a whole different thing. So comic books, my dad. My dad said, before he went into the Navy, he took all of his EC comic books, you know, William Gaines, all of those, you know, Vault of Horror and Weird Science, the list
Tales
goes
from
on.
The Crypt.
Absolutely. All of that stuff. And he put him in the basement and he went off, you know, and he came back and he said, back in those days, we didn't really have plastic. So I went to the basement, got the comics, picked them up, and all of the paper had rotted. He said, I had the best comic book cover collection you ever saw. And I'm like, no! And so there's two things that I have. I bought a crappy, destroyed version of a Weird Science issue from the 50s. I forgot how much it cost me. It is garbage. No one would want to own it, but I do. And that's in honor of my dad. And my dad bought me my first comic book, which is also destroyed due to me as a child, but I still have it. It was a 1968 copy of the Uncanny X-Men. And
nice.
And that's what did it. And I was just amazed by this art, by these really cool stories. I just lost myself in them. And I went nuts. I can't even tell you if I loved at the time DC or Marvel more, but mm-hmm. I became a super staunch Batman fanatic, thanks mostly to Neil Adams, you know, who just took it and made it adult again after the 50s and 60s hokiness of Batman and fell in love after that. And just like with horror movies, I'm trying, you know, people are like, what, do you read comic books? What, are you stupid? And it's like, you moron, you're not seeing the value in this storyline? Like, what the hell? And
yeah, like the power of metaphor and, you know, to tap into certain things, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, some of the stuff that I read, you know, was you know, just disposable, and I'll admit that. But then, you know, when we came into the graphic novel phase, I would say starting in like the 80s, it really did, you know, and then it became really strong and powerful and respectable. I mean, you know, for a lot of people who don't know, Alan Moore's Watchmen novel is listed as one of the top 100 pieces of best literature of all time. And it was like, yes, that's a win, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, I think that Watchmen's brilliant, you know, and I love the movie just as much, even though I know fans are like, well, they didn't have the giant squid. Fuck you, they didn't have the giant squid. It's still a fucking great movie. But it's anti-American now because just fucking shut up, you know? It's like, no, but I get it, you know? So, like, that was it, starting at, you know, that young. And I think the reason I was really drawn to Batman was because Batman isn't a superhero. He's a very eccentric, rich guy who's a friggin' brainiac. And, you know, he's a fighter. And, you know, that meme used to go around with Bill... oh, my God. Bill from Microsoft.
Bill Gates,
holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, yeah, you know, Bill Gates should have been Batman, but he isn't. You know, it's like, and then I'm like, yeah, it's like, I hate that guy now, you know? It's like, you know, because he had the money, he had the brains, and he just didn't get the Batmobile, and it's like,
right,
you know. But anyway, so that's what I loved, and then, like, then, you know, comic books was really wallowing for me for a long while, and then Alan Moore again, you know, and this was, you know, Killing Joke came out, and that, like, blew my mind. And the one comic book series that I haven't sold, because I've sold all my comic books except for a handful, is Howard Chaykin's phenomenal Black Kiss. And I'm honored to own a piece of art from the actual comic book. And Howard Chaykin, if you haven't read Black Kiss and you're all about how you love Frank Miller and Sin City, which is great, none of that would have existed if not for Howard Chaykin's Black Kiss, because he's the one who bridged that gap between underground comic books that were seedy and very R-rated plus to, you know, the commercial comic books, which were so horrifically relegated, regulated, like, you know, unfortunately movies are, with the MPAA censored and such. And he bridged that gap, and he opened the door to, I would say, Dark Horse Comics and what they do and everything else. So I have a lot of love for Howard Chaykin.
You know what, Bill? You actually got me an issue of, I guess, the first issue of Big Black Kiss last Christmas.
Yeah, I had to. Big Black Kiss was the book form of, like, the first few comics. And it was tough, man. It was tough to find. It was tough to get my paws on it and tough to get a decent version of it. But I wanted you to, like, you know, hopefully get into it a little bit, because it covered a lot of ground, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, I did read it, and I was like, wow. It really reminded me of kind of the stuff I read from Hard Case Crime.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe taken up a few notches, because it is, right, there's some stuff in there that's, like, literally pornographic. But, you know, yeah. I'm like, hey, that's what makes it good, right?
Yeah, that was the beautiful thing. And what Howard Chaykin did is, and that also inspired me with my own writing. It's like, you know, you can't have something that's hard-boiled yet present it in PG-13 format. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, that's why I have trouble with these hard-boiled novels. Oh, man, this one's really hard. You got to read it. And it's like, they're holding back on language, holding back on violence, holding back on sex. And it's like, this is written for kids, man. You know? And And I think that was the other thing too, especially when it was the initial conversion from comic books to movies, Hollywood was like, let's make it for kids. And I hated how they dumbed down Howard the Duck, which was a brilliant, brilliant comic book. And they made it a little kid's story. And it's like, this is, that was R-rated stuff back then in the 80s. And, and you know, the average comic book reader for many, many moons, decades, has always been average 26 years old. It's adults. It's an adult thing. So that's why I was appreciating more of the, you know, Batman Begins and The Dark Knight and taking graphic novels like, History of Violence, you know, stuff like that, which a lot of people, oh, that was a comic book? Yeah, it was a fucking comic book, you know? It's like, you know, it's like, wow, that's really intense. Yeah, well, maybe you should read more comics, you know? And,
Well, I think there's kind of a misconception. It's like you said, the average comics reader is 26 years old. And I think that's something that Marvel and, you know, the other companies that are making movies are tapping into, like you said, with The Dark Knight, you know, tailoring it more towards an adult crowd. Whereas like a lot of animated movies have stuff that adults can latch onto, like these movies are really, even though teenagers and kids might be interested in seeing, say, Birds of Prey or something like that. You know,
I love that. I love Birds of Prey. That was such a blast.
Oh, it was so good. Yeah, I love it. That's one of my favorites of the year. But it's like, now the adults, that's like for the adults, but the kids want to go see it. I have a feeling there's kind of a, there's a trade-off kind of. It's like the adults are taking their kids to see it, but they really want to see it maybe more than the kids do, or will appreciate it more than the kids do. So,
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was just thinking of Birds of Prey. No, that was such a blast. Such a blast.
It was just like, you know, you need a fun movie to watch this in this spittoon of a year. That's the movie you want to watch.
Yeah, Margot, man, she's so awesome. Margot Robbie kills it.
Yeah, I think what they did with Harley Quinn in that movie was much better than what they did with Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad, so...
Yeah, I guess that's why I was disappointed. Like, you know, I thought Tim Burton, when he did, you know, his Batman movie, I thought he really got the aesthetic well. But even my brother, you know, he was disappointed. He's like, I love Jack Nicholson, and he made a decent Joker, but he should have been some unknown thin guy that was creepy. And I was like, yeah, I know. And and because I'll never forget, like, the day Heath Ledger died, I was like, it didn't really affect me. And then I go see The Dark Knight and I'm like, oh no, he's dead, you know? It's like, he can't reprise his role.
Well, and I think there was a lot of skepticism too when it was announced that he was going to play the Joker. A lot of people were like, sort of like with Robert Pattinson taking over the Batman role, you know? Oh, he's the Twilight guy. No, he's not. Have you watched any of his post-Twilight movies? They're all fucking awesome. You know?
Rob Pattinson is one of the best damn actors out there. He is gold. He is amazing. He's incredible. Everybody has that. You know, Kevin Bacon, man, he's cool as hell. But, you know, he did, you know...
Footloose.
I can't even watch that movie, and I just can't look at it. It's like someone would go, oh, Footloose, and you're singing the fucking song Kenny Loggins, and I just want to, like, commit murder, you know? It's like...
Yeah, I mean, I don't get that stuff. But I think there was a lot of judging of Heath Ledger, or sort of like skepticism before anybody ever saw any of the raw footage or any trailer or anything. And then when the movie came out, it was like, holy, he is a totally unique incarnation of this character that we've never seen before.
Absolutely.
And it was a great surprise, I think, to a lot of people. And, you know, I think it is a great performance.
It was a phenomenal performance, you know, and he certainly deserved the Oscar for it. It's funny, we have two Oscar winners for playing the same character, Joker. That says a lot right there, you know? What the hell?
I'm sorry, Bill. I got disconnected for a second.
Oh, okay. That was really weird. I'm going to keep that in because that was bizarre. Maybe it was like Heath Ledger talking to us. No, I was saying, you know, I think it's wild that two actors won for playing the Joker. Joaquin Phoenix, who certainly deserved it.
Oh, yeah.
And Heath Ledger, you know, for playing the same comic book character. And I think that says, you know, it gives it so much merit. You know, it's all like, it's not just about action and, you know, people flying around and all of that, you know. I mean, the one thing that really surprised me and impressed me, because I really loved Kick-Ass, and I was like, oh, you know, from Vertigo, and I'm like, this is a DC descendant, and it's like, are they going to, like, reel these guys in? And they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, they have, you know, Grace Moretz, you know, a little kid going, hey, you cunts, and I'm like, shit, I love it! You know, it's, like, beautiful. And... Right. And then, like, right in the beginning of Deadpool, it's like, you know, hey, motherfucker. I'm like, thank God. You know, here we are. It's an R-rated movie. Beautiful. It's made for the adults, and that's what the comic book was for, you know? And I just loved that. I thought both Deadpools were great. I'm looking forward to Deadpool 3.
No, yeah, I agree with you, Bill. And, I mean, I think, you know, I think a movie that might have helped with the proliferation of this in a small way was a movie that wasn't based on a pre-existing comic book, but it had the focal point of the lead character loves comics, so he wants to turn into a superhero. So there, I think it came out around the same time as Kick-Ass, but it was James Gunn's Super.
Yes!
With Rainn Wilson as the Crimson Bolt, which was this whole... You know, and we have Ellen, now Elliot Page, as his sidekick, you know, and I, you know, I love that movie, and that movie was very un-PC.
Thank God.
It was kind of all over the place, but it was also very crude, but very violent too, like Kick-Ass was, or, you know, Sin City for that matter. So it was really interesting to see that movie, which kind of pushed boundaries, and then James Gunn kind of ironically went on to do Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's doing the next Suicide Squad movie. So
and you know, one of the things too, you know, we're talking about comic books, and for me, I don't think you could talk about comic books without talking about Japanese manga, and so many wonderful, you know, films have come out. I can't even name them all because, you know, just so many out of Japan based on the comic books, whether it's an animated thing or live action. And yeah. I think, you know, any American producer worth his or her salt would be looking at that and seeing, like, man, they're doing this great crossover, you know, from their comics to film, and they're making tons of money, and not just in Japan, but around the globe. Holy shit, you know, we got to get in on that. And I think that helped open the door. Plus, Hollywood, especially since 2008, the collapse of the economy, they're doing two things. They're remaking because it's cheaper, and it's like, well, it worked before. It's probably going to work again with a new generation. We'll get a better return on investment. So it's all about not losing money. And this comes out of the 70s. Once you had Star Wars and Jaws, these blockbusters, it's like, well, we want to hit a home run every time. And it's like, okay, come on. But with a book, if you have like a gigantic audience, it's a built-in fan base. They love the book, they're going to see the movie. They love the comic book, they're going to see the movie. So that was the mentality. And like superhero movies, people are, you know, some people are like, oh, when's this going to end? It's not. It's not for a long time. You know, it's just not going to happen.
I'm actually that guy. Yeah.
No, I know. But it's like that audience is still there. You know, when I think if they water down things, like I'm hoping that we'll reach a point where I can say, holy crap, they're making a movie. And it's called Killing Joke by Alan Moore.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I loved how they incorporated a lot of elements from Frank Miller's The Dark Knight, which is phenomenal, about an aging Batman, how they put that in The Dark Knight. But I remember just, you know, when I was watching, like, you know, Tim Burton stuff and all, and I was like, oh, my God, this is still catering to the cheesiness of, like, the 70s and all, of the, actually, the 60s and 50s.
The TV show.
Yeah. Which is great, and I love the Batman TV show. It's a blast. But that's when Batman was corny, before he became the Dark Knight, the detective again, and they're like, get rid of that Robin shit, you know, like, you know, let's go out. But I would love to see Killing Joke the movie. I would love to see that. I would, like, you know, why not? But but then again, thanks to you showing me other things, there's comic books outside of the realm of the superhero subgenre of comic books where I want to see other things too. So,
well, you know, it's interesting, Bill. You know, since you were like saying cartoons are a whole different thing, I'm not going to talk about the stuff I read in the newspaper when I was little. I mean, though, I'll give a shout out to The Far Side and Calvin and Hobbes, which I still love.
Same here, man. Same here. And
I still have those books. If they're not on my shelf, they're in a tub. I'm not getting rid of them.
Yeah, same here. I have all my Far Side books. And I loved Shu. Shu was awesome, too. They're very witty.
Yeah, I also read Bloom County when I was little, but I didn't understand any of the political references until I was like in my 20s. So I was like, oh, all this stuff's about Ronald Reagan and feminism and stuff like that. I was like, okay, all right, that was pretty clever. But you know what, Bill? Probably my gateway book, and this is definitely, we're going to diverge here, because I wasn't into comics, you know. Just in general, I wasn't into them. I mean, I liked animated TV shows. I liked the comic strips in the paper. But I never really got into, like, Batman or Superman or any of the Marvel stuff. I think my gateway into, like, graphic novels was the book Mouse by Art Spiegelman. Oh! Have you read that, Bill?
Beautiful, beautiful, phenomenal. Tell them about it.
Yeah, it was actually, I still have the original copies I bought like back in the early 90s.
Nice, that's awesome.
Yeah, they actually, years later, they merged it into like a single book, but at first it was just like two separate volumes you had to buy. Yeah, and it's this book that's just taking Art Spiegelman's father's experience in a concentration camp at World War II, and he finds kind of a metaphorical way to present history. The mice, I should say, the Jewish people in the concentration camps are represented as mice, anthropomorphic mice, and the Nazis, their captors, are cats. You know, so it was a really interesting approach to telling kind of like something, you know, we've seen Schindler's List, we've seen footage of the atrocities at the death camps. This was kind of a way to make it, I don't want to say palatable, but present it in a different way to kind of, I don't know if his intention was to kind of not soften the blow, but just kind of make it, because it's such a painful period of history, and considering how personal it was because it was his father, maybe that was the way he thought was best to represent what was happening. And there's even a character who shows up late in the story who's French, and he's a frog. So, you know, it was really interesting. And actually, the first volume, I did a book report on it. It was an oral book report in eighth grade. And the teacher was actually, I think, a little pissed off at me because she didn't realize it was a graphic novel. And I was like, well, it's not my fault you didn't do your research if you didn't want me to read a graphic novel.
Yeah.
But the thing I'd argue is that, you know, it is very much a, I don't know if you'd even call it a novel, because it's based in reality. It's almost a different way of documenting history. So I think in that way, I mean, it won the Pulitzer Prize, not to, you know, sound all hoity-toity about it, but just like, this was, to what you were saying, Bill, it was being considered differently. You know, it was taking the medium and kind of taking it to a different place, because it's not just a rock'em sock'em superhero thing. It's actually... There's not that I'm saying there's nothing thematic going on with those stories, but this was definitely something that was created and crafted with a very specific intent in mind, and it was to kind of tell this story about history. So I actually think that was probably my entry point. I was in probably seventh or eighth grade when I read those graphic novels.
And that's funny because as soon as you said mouse, that reminded me of Marjane Satrapi's Persepolis.
Which I haven't read. Yeah.
Right, I've read parts of it, and it's awesome. It was originally published in French, and it's about her growing up in Iran when there was the big Islamic revolution, and the Ayatollah came to power, and she's like rebelling, and it's like that's not a good thing, man, right now. And her family fled to Austria, and she was always trying to weigh, like, you know, her Muslim self, her Iranian self, and she's like a punk rocker smoking and doing all this stuff. And she's just like, and it's about, you know, it's definitely about, you know, women's rights and, you know, people's rights in general. And it's just really just keeps expanding. And it's a diary. It's pretty much a diary of, you know, her experiences. And she's cool as hell. And it's awesome. And I love the art. It's, and like, you know, like Mouse, it just really, you know, hits home.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that kind of maybe started a trajectory for me, which was kind of like, I was kind of a goofball in school. But at the same time, I was like, I was always kind of attracted toward darker stuff. So it kind of tracked that I would be cracking jokes in class, but then be really interested in reading this graphic novel about the Holocaust, you know, and doing a downer of a book report on it, so maybe that kind of influenced my trajectory. Cause I was always more interested in the more, I was less interested in comic books of kind of the mainstream sort. And I was always hovering more towards, I guess, more idiosyncratic stuff. So, I mean, I think the second thing that I can recall for me is, and this started with a movie that led me into discovering or buying stuff by this artist, was the movie Crumb.
Yes. Yes.
You've seen that, Bill. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, the 60s, you know, countercultural cartoonist who documented the hippie era kind of in a very acerbic way, and he's been documenting, I mean, he documented the horrors of American culture for decades until he moved to France, probably like 20 or 30 years ago. And it's just that movie is just so, I think the reason I gravitated toward that movie was because I saw it pop up on some, in probably Entertainment Weekly's best of 94 or 95 movies, and that was kind of like my source for like, what are these independent or mainstream movies coming out and what do people think of them? And I think they listed it as number two, and I was like, and I read this sort of the synopsis and the reviewer's thoughts, and I think I'd read a Siskel or Roger Ebert's review, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I want to see this. So I did, and it's just it's part of the Criterion Collection now. I have it on my shelf. It's just a very jaw-dropping, very intimate and personal movie about Robert Crumb and his family, his wife, his two brothers. It's a deep dive into kind of his formative years, and it's interesting because he's kind of positioned, he's being filmed talking and kind of interviewing his brothers and his mom, and it's just very strangely touching, strangely intimate. But it's also very disturbing because you hear some of the stories about his upbringing and you're like, damn, like what happened to, you know, his father was apparently very abusive. That led me to his comics. And the cool thing about that movie is there's one point where he actually goes like panel by panel through one of these comics that he's drawn.
Right.
So it's like you get that sample in there along with a bunch of still images, and it's a very unique, very kind of grotesque style. And I started picking up, they had compilations of his comics at shout out to Comics Connection in East York, where I was snatching up these volumes of the Complete Crumb comics, just kind of getting a feel for his, you know, his style and his, you know, his interests, kind of his fetishes, mm-hmm. that stuff. And again, his
stuff, fetishes are there, man.
Yeah, I was gonna say like sort of like Big Black Kiss, but not really. It's just the material is just fearlessly explicit, you know. Mm-hmm. It's fearlessly personal. It's, you know, you want to see, you know, swinging dicks, you want to see people having sex in graphic and absurd detail, it's all in there, you know. And I'm
giant
not saying
buttocks is,
yeah.
Pickles and, yeah, cucumbers.
He does like the gams, that's for sure. Yeah, but it's just like, it's, I kind of related to his stuff because he,
right,
was such a, you know, he's was kind of an outsider, and
oh, definitely an outsider.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think a lot of people got a great taste for who Crumb was from the 2008 American Splendor film, which is also based on the American Splendor comic, which
Harvey Pekar.
Harvey,
yeah.
Pekar and James Urbaniak, you know, played him. Bayonne, New Jersey, man, place of birth. Got to give that one credit. And, you know, Harvey Pekar was played by Paul Giamatti, and it was such a, talk about a meta film, you know. Mm-hmm. They were incorporating the comic book into the film, and the real Harvey Pekar, who even pointed out, look,
yes,
at this guy, he doesn't even look like me, to Paul Giamatti. Like, and it was just, the whole movie was just phenomenal. I gave that one 5 stars. I mean, that movie just blew my mind. It was so cool, linking all the worlds of entertainment, from comic book, talk shows. They even did the whole David Letterman thing, which was very controversial. Yeah. Harvey Pekar was on there, and he was like, hey, man, you're making fun of me. You know, and it took him like a while to get that. And, you know, just like, and he incorporated other people in it. You know, there was Batman and Robin, the Green Lantern. Like, there was all this crazy shit going on. And it was just really awesome because it represented Harvey Pekar's world and his year of cancer and how he survived. And Hope Davis is his wife, and I've adored forever. You know,
yeah.
Donald Logue, Molly Shannon. I mean, the list goes on. This movie is loaded. I can't believe it's 17 years ago this movie came out. And we lost Harvey Pekar 10 years ago, which is, you know, at age 70.
Oh, you know what? I haven't watched that movie since it first came out on video. I think I need to give it another look, because I don't think I completely got it when I watched it. Maybe because of all the different meta layers of meta going on with it, I think I might have gotten a bit tripped out.
No, you know? No. A ton of meta everything, ton of references, I don't know what the budget was for that movie, but it's just phenomenal.
Yeah. I'll have to check it out again, because I get the feeling, mm-hmm, it pairs well with Crumb in its own way.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that definitely a great doubleheader there. And no, what you were saying before about, you know, getting into, you know, comic books and how like teachers' perceptions of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't until I became a professor and I started to really mix up my classes and with different approaches to teaching. And to make sure that I covered, like, you know, a whole bunch of a wide array of, like, reaching students.
Yes.
When I realized, yeah, holy shit, man, I'm like 40-something, and I just realized I'm a visual learner. And I'm like, holy crap. And, man, it's like, oh, that kid won't read. Instead of, like, you know, maybe the kid's having issues reading, it's like, give him a comic book, man. Give him a good comic book. Maybe they can see with the visual images. Maybe the shit will start to connect in their head. You know, it's a great, you know, we started off our language by using pictographs, hieroglyphs, using images to represent words and thoughts. So these comic books are perfect. It's a perfect continuation and mix of communication. And it's like, why not incorporate that and do it? I know in one class, I wasn't teaching it, but the one professor is like, yeah, they're all reading Mouse. And so I was like, freaking awesome. Yeah. And they were all loving it. You know, it's like, holy shit, this is amazing. Because it is so funny. I can read books galore, and I know people who could quote Shakespeare and stuff, and I always want to punch them in the head. And it's like, you know, they're quoting this and that. And I remember someone came up to me, he's like, Bill, give me a great quote from one of your books. And I'm like, how the fuck do I know that? And I'm like, I don't know anything. And I'm thinking, why? Because I'm quoting movies left and right because I have the words associated with a visual image. And it's like, I could quote movies inside and out most times. Books? No. Oh, man, that book was amazing. The Great Gatsby's phenomenal. Blew my mind. Yeah, what's a great line from it? I don't know. And it's not like, you know, I'm a sieve. It's just like there was no visual component, so it's not going to stick in my head. You know? Comic books do.
Yeah, you know something, Bill? I think the word maybe I was looking for to describe mouse wasn't that it was softening anything. It was making things more accessible.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. That sort of ties into what you were saying about visual learning. I think there's definitely a case to be made for that. And I think, you know, as comics continue to be as long as creators continue to kind of push the parameters and kind of tell more literary stories, perhaps, or not even literary stories, just like good stories, you know, I think there is that potential. It's like, oh yeah, you could get something out of that that you wouldn't be able to with just printed words on a page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I definitely think that's a good point.
Great. And that's awesome. And I'm glad you agree. And I think there's something else with comic book storytelling, because you can do things that you can't maybe show visually otherwise. And that's what brings me to actually one you can with this. You bought me a graphic novel a couple of years ago, Charles Burns's Black Hole.
Yes.
And I'm reading this thing and I'm like, holy shit, I want to see this in film. And it almost was made into a film. And and I still hope it happens, because it's like, why can't we go beyond the superhero elements or the dramatic elements, like Road to Perdition, even? That's a comic book. Yeah, you fucking dolt. Like, look who the story's by. Look, it's a comic book, and they made it into an amazing film. And it's like, come on, can't you see the value of that comics can have? Mm-hmm. And Black Hole would just be an amazing story to see on screen. But the one that really gets to me, and you and I haven't talked about it, because I need to like read it probably three more times. But I loved it. I think it's amazing. It blew my mind. And I'm like, man, if Lynch wants to do another film, if he could make like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron by Daniel Close, you know, King of 8-Ball, you know, if he could, like, that would be incredible, because that movie is a trip and a half, and I wouldn't even know where to begin. I even said movie. Even to begin with that graphic novel.
You know what, Bill? I'm glad you brought that up, because I wasn't sure if you'd read that one. So, did I get that one for you?
Yeah, you did, man.
I
always appreciate when you give me a graphic novel, because it's like, oh, it's going to be weird and it's going to be cool. And so it's like, yay.
Yeah, you know what, Bill? Yeah, that thing blew my mind when I first read it, because I think it was the second thing I read by Daniel Klaus after Ghost World, which is his hugely, that's his
another great film.
Yeah, and they turned that into a great movie. Again, Terry Zwigoff, who did Crumb.
Right.
Ghost World. Yeah.
And it launched Scarlett Johansson's career.
Oh, yeah, actually, that's... It's amazing to see where she's, how far she's come. Yeah.
I mean, Steve Buscemi's in it, Thora Birch. It's like, come on, watch that movie. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Ileana Douglas.
Oh. I want to kiss her eyeballs. Go ahead.
Yeah, but no, it's just it's a very stream of consciousness graphic novel. Which did begin life as like a serialized thing in the Klaus's 8-Ball.
Yep.
And yeah, it's just like you said, Bill. It's very Lynchian, But it's not like you read it and you don't feel like, oh, this is like Blue Velvet. Oh, this is like Fire Walk With Me. It is its own unique, otherworldly thing.
Definitely otherworldly.
Like what do you think makes that book so distinctive, Bill?
I think what bizarre characters, bizarre everything. Mm-hmm. But like every time you turned a page, it was something brand new. It was like a scene changing in a film every time you turned a page, and it's like, where am I going now? Where am I going to end up? You know, who's going to live? Who's going to die? Which strange, bizarro shit am I going to see and experience? And it was funny because it was about experience, and it was about, you know, adjusting to the environment around you and trying to like steady your own ship in many ways. And God, that comic got fucking insane. But it didn't become so esoteric where you're like, what? It's like, I can't stop reading. And I purposefully slowed myself down so I wouldn't finish it right away and go, oh, it's over. You know, I didn't want that. Right. I didn't want it to end. But then again, I wanted some semblance of a conclusion. And
it's so weird, Bill, without giving anything away, that
I know that's why I'm like trying not to say anything.
I mean like the last page of that graphic novel is like, it's such a paradox, because it in one way you think it's Klaus giving you a happy ending, but then you see like the condition of who's on that last page, and it's like, it's not really a happy ending at all. I don't know what the hell to consider that. It's just really weird, like you said. Like throughout, it's weird, but something I really like about Klaus, and when I read Ghost World for the first time, like I really latched on to his very human sense of the humor. Is very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good with characters. And just kind of like this weird, there's a weird episodic nature to Ghost World, because that was like a multi-part thing in 8-Ball before they collected it. And I think the same thing in a different way applies to like a Velvet Glove. It's just very, each chapter is kind of like an episode of like a limited Netflix series or something like that, which is, I think, how they should do Black Hole and like a Velvet Glove. You know, but it's like there's such a sense of the random in that story that it's just like so, I think, like you said, that's what keeps you reading it. And it's so well done. And even these characters who just pop up for a panel or two are so distinguished looking and so unsettling looking that you can't forget them. You know.
No, exactly. And I find it interesting that the latest update from IMDb is that it's still in pre-production. This was as of November of last year. But it's the director's supposed to be Rick Famuyiwa. And
For Black Hole.
For Black Hole, yeah. I'm sorry. Apparently, Neil Gaiman did an earlier, and we'll talk about Neil Gaiman in a minute. can't do a show on comics without talking about Neil Gaiman. He did an earlier screenplay version. Roger Avery did it. So I think they're having writing issues. But it's produced by Brad Pitt for his Plan B Entertainment. And it's supposed to be a new Regency production with Paramount. So it's right now in pre-production hell. So I hope it comes to fruition. And
I hope they find a way to adapt it to faithfully. Mm-hmm. Personally, Bill, when I was reading Black Hole, you know, and I've read that a couple times, just that book is so fucked up, but again, it's so human. It's very Cronenbergian in mm-hmm. a lot of ways. Cronenbergian in the way that Velvet Glove is very Lynchian, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Because I had this vision of just, why not do Black Hole like Robert Rodriguez did Sin City? Take the panels of the comics,
exactly,
shoot it in black and white, use the panels as a storyboard, film it like it is. That's going to be your, you know,
that
you
yeah.
do as much as you can that way.
Yes, I mean, Sin City was brilliant, and when you read the graphic novel and you look at the film, you're like, holy shit, it's like it's like the page just came alive. But
oh, exactly.
You know, I hope Rick Famuyiwa gets to do it because as director, because he's done so much, you know, with television and all, and he's like announced to do so many great projects, like Children of Blood and Bone coming up, and he did, you know, 3 episodes for Mandalorian and the movie Dope and all. I mean, he is just each time he does something, he's like, you know, taking a step up, and so it would be really cool to see him do something really wild with this. I think one of the people who almost single-handedly bridged this gap between anti-comic book snobs and pro-comic book, you know, people who were like trying to find proof of the value of a comic book is the great narrative storytelling of Neil Gaiman. Mm-hmm. And I think he brought those worlds, really helped bring those worlds together, just as Alan Moore did, you know, who was like, hey man, who looks like Alan Moore looks like fucking Rasputin. And it's like, he's like, it's about, a comic book is about story, and it doesn't have to be just about like, you know, just like, you know, goofiness or whatever. And, you know, they really catered to story, and that's what I think propelled both of them. It wasn't just the visual assistants that came along with the storytelling, but they mapped out these intense, profound stories that did what any good piece of literature is supposed to do, what any good, great piece of art is supposed to do, which is to keep you thinking. Yeah. And I mean, you read Watchmen, you watch Watchmen, how can you not, you know, stop thinking? You look Sandman, it's like, holy crap, you know, and it's like you're just so engaged, and it's just such a story. It's such a fairy tale for like adults. It's like, how could you look away? How could you just like discard it? Oh yeah, it's just a comic book. No. I mean, Neil Gaiman's one of the most respected storytellers in the world today.
You know what, Bill? Yeah, and he's a very accomplished novelist as well. And absolutely. He did Coraline, which was turned into a fantastic movie, which I love. You know, Bill, I have not read Sandman. Can you summarize that for myself and maybe anybody else? I think they're turning that into a movie or series as well.
I think so, too. I hate giving anything away, man.
That's okay. I should probably just read it because it's so, you know, it's so universally adored. I just don't really have an excuse as to why I haven't.
No. I understand. Said, I mean, and they have audio adaptations of it now, which is cool. Really cool. It was a big coup for DC to do it.
Would it be kind of fall in the realm of fantasy, Bill, or if you had to categorize it?
Yeah, I would say so. Sure. I'm going on. You know, Wikipedia, you know, needs help to stay alive again. So that's my little plug for Wikipedia. I'm just going to what they have to say here. The main character, the Sandman, is Dream, also known as Morpheus, and other names, who is one of the Seven Endless. So this is a whole big fantasy realm, and this is a multifaceted story, not necessarily a soap opera, okay? Because we don't want to say that. And it's, as it says here, it's famous for Gaiman's trademark use of anthropomorphic personification. I can't believe we used anthropomorphic twice in a show. Holy
shit. I'm
going
to use it again.
Yeah. Excellent. Manifestation of various metaphysical entities, which also blend mythology and history in its horror setting with the DC universe. So there you go. He's the Lord of Dreams, obviously Sandman, and that just, you know, people were just wowed by it, and rightfully so. It's funny, I thought it was older than it was, but in 1989. Yeah, 1989, it launched, and it just captured the imagination. And I also think this was part of that whole thing with DC, you know, trying to amp up, like, you know, it's comics. It's like, nah, this isn't for, we know our audience, it's not kid crap. We're not going to have Bat Dog or, you know, Batman's going to be in space breathing methane. I mean, I sold them all. I had all those comics from the 50s and 60s that were hokey and ridiculous. Right. And it's like, no, let's put meat on his bone, man. Let's have like readers go, dude, did you see that story? That's incredible. And, you know, Sandman helped DC set a whole new standard for itself.
Yeah, you know, Bill, you were talking about Watchmen earlier, and I just feel like it's a very literary. It is more like a novel than a graphic novel. The synthesis between the images and the words, and the fact that there are like sections in between that are actually like excerpts from that Under the Hood book.
Yes, you
know? Yes. So you're actually just reading for pages and pages as well, in addition to looking at the pictures as well, and the panels of the ongoing story, and the whole thing with the Black Freighter too.
Oh man, what a raft he built. And I think that, you know, one of the beauty, and it's funny because I am actually wearing right now my Rorschach shirt, which is falling apart from Watchmen. And I remember my one friend was like, he didn't know anything about the comic or anything like that. And he's a very learned man, very intelligent. And he was like, fuck that movie. What is this crypto-fascist Rorschach guy? Like, he didn't get any of it. He thought, like a lot of people, because opening weekend, that movie was killing it. And then people realized this isn't a disposable superhero film. This is a character study. Yeah. And we have these characters who are multifaceted. They all have depth. You can love and hate each one of them for different reasons. And like the comedian, the guy's practically an extremist loon. But once in a while, boom, these words of logic come out. And it's like, holy shit, you know. And Rorschach, same. It's like, oh my God, this guy, you know, he's a crypto fascist. But, oh, that line made sense. And you could say the rest for all, Night Owl 2 and the rest, you know. And yeah. And it was just like just incredible, and it has such value today and right now, you know. In the comic book, Nixon's what, on his fifth term or some crap, because you know he changed the laws, and it's like
something like that. Yeah,
it's like, you know, he's an Aaron Burr based character, which we see in our soon to be ousted president in the United States.
Can't be ousted soon enough.
I know. I use the word term loosely because, you know, and it's just like, holy crap, you know, about being blind, you know, being blind to emotion leads to blindness. I like that. Mm-hmm. I got to use that in a book.
Write it down, Bill.
I need to because I'll forget it because I'm a visual learner.
I'm writing it down for you.
Thanks, buddy. I love you, man. And, you know, and that's really important to, you know, logic, reason, and take a step back. So when you have, like, in that one phenomenal scene where comedian, this right-wing guy, and Night Owl 2, this left-wing guy, who are superheroes, who are watchmen, trying to disperse a crowd, and Night Owl's like, he's getting emotional. He's like, what happened to the American dream? And the comedian's like, it came true. And I remember watching in the theater going, fuck, you know, just like he blew my mind, you know, just like, holy shit. And in fact, I used that because I think my housemate Cheryl even asked me, you know, like something like, what happened to American dream? It's like, it came true. I was just like, I felt so good about myself for saying it. And just seeing, like, the look, it's like, what? It's like, holy fuck. Damn. You know, is that it? Have we all, you know?
Yeah, you know, I really love the line that Rorschach says to the child killer. He says, men get arrested. Dogs get put down. I'm like, oh, you can also apply some of that to where we're at right now too. Yeah.
What was it? No compromise even in the face of Armageddon, something like that?
Yep. That's
I was like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
I loved when he was in prison. I'm not in here with you. You're in here with me. And I was like, yeah. It's like, damn. And
Shaq, I'm gonna fuck you like I fucked your mother.
Oh my God, that movie is just phenomenal, with the greatest opening title sequence I have ever seen in my life. talk about, we're going to set the story in motion with this title sequence. And it was like, holy shit. And they did it.
Oh, and the and the fight scene that leads into that opening credit sequence is amazing too. Yeah.
No, it was just so brilliant. And you know, it's easy to get sidetracked on a great comic, you know. And this is like right out of the book. I mean, yeah, the movie did some things that were different. Alan Moore was like, fuck that, I'm not watching it. I don't want any part of this shit. You know, he didn't want it. Although the artist did. Who's it, Boland? Oh my God, I forgot.
Dave Gibbons, I believe.
Dave Gibbons, oh man, I've got to look that up real quick so I don't look like an idiot. I already look like an idiot anyway.
It's kind of funny because, you know, Alan Moore's name doesn't even appear on the credits because he didn't want anything to do with it. So it was, the credit was based on the DC comic Watchmen, co-created by.
right.
Which is kind of an awkward credit there.
Yeah, and I still have to see the series, which I heard was great. Yeah, Dave Gibbons. And Dave Gibbons, one of the things that's great behind the scenes on that is phenomenal. Really, if you're like interested in film and how movies are made, watch the behind the scenes of Watchmen. It is so in depth. And these artists, all these people went so in depth to details that you can't really see or appreciate on screen. But, you know, they just really cared. Dave Gibbons said, just like the comic book, we're using secondary colors. We don't want to use the prime. And it was just, and it's like, oh my God, how thematic is that? You know, and it just goes on and on. And I think that's the depth of like all comics, you know, will have value. Some will be just pure entertainment. Check your brain at the door. Some will have really wonderful and amazing stories. Even the even Deadpool, it's like you watch that. You know, he can't be killed. He could be like, you know, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, he's ripped to shreds. The X-Men want him and they want him to follow rules. He's like, fuck you, man. He's like a punk rocker, like, you know, comic hero. But he will like risk his life to save anyone. And his heart is in the right place, even though he's just like making it up as he goes along. And there's a strong comic element to it. But it's just that, you know, he's like the superhero that you can't not love. And,
yeah, and I think what I like about Deadpool, Bill, is just that he seemed to come in, that movie seemed to come at a point where we kind of needed a breath of irrelevance. Not irrelevance, irreverence,
yeah.
You know, irreverence within the superhero genre. Just like I think things had gotten kind of, even with DC's films, not DC's, God, I'm fucking up tonight.
That's right.
Even with Marvel movies, like it was at that point they were building towards these big Avengers movies. Like,
yeah.
I mean, even Captain America: Civil War was basically just another Avengers movie because it got so many of those characters together. And then you had Infinity War, and I'm not sure where Deadpool fell on the timeline, but I think with that it was just like, oh, we're stakes are getting higher. Thanos is gonna, you know, dust everybody, you know, or dust some people. So it's like I think bringing Deadpool into the mix was kind of a nice breath of fresh air. It's like you could go to one of those movies and just have fun, more or less.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I still think... Go ahead.
No. Go, finish your thought, man.
No, I just, you know, I still think there are stakes in Deadpool, but there's also that sense of humor. There's the fourth wall breaking, which is fun. And
It is.
You know, the violence is just so absurdly over the top. You can't help but laugh when a guy gets chucked at a highway sign, you know, and splatters, you know, against it. So.
Oh my God! Yeah, and it's meta too. I mean, he makes fun of comic books. Ooh, look at that superhero landing, and it's like hilarious. You know, it's like, like who would put like, you know? Oh my God, it's just incredible. And Ryan Reynolds, he is Deadpool. It's like I'm like, oh my God, they got the perfect guy for this.
Yeah.
And you know, TJ Miller is Weasel. It's like you can't get better than that right there. And oh my God. And I just, you know, comics are, you know, they're not going anywhere at all, which is great. You know, I have a dream that one day I will have you know, a comic, because two of the comic books that I wrote are not one to be filmed would be like $100 million. No one's going to do that. Although I almost did sell it at one time. That's a long, horrible story. But No, but it would be cool. I was like, it'll work as a graphic novel, and I found someone who I'm going to give a scream out to shortly who's like, yeah, that's definitely a graphic novel. And I'm like, oh, so we'll see what happens with that, because he has multiple projects like I do. His name's David Murdoch. I had him on the show.
Oh, yeah, Lucas.
Lucas, yeah. Oh, my God. And I think he did something for comic books. If you don't have Lucas, see it, you can get it digitally and all. We'll talk about that in a little bit, where you could find it. But mm-hmm. I was so impressed. His artwork is impressionistic,
yes,
which I thought was amazing. And it's not panels. It's like here's the words that go along with the scene. And it really was like a novel with pictures. It was a really true graphic novel. And I'm like, holy shit, this guy can write and draw? Holy shit. Like, you know, my God, I wish I could do both, you know?
Yeah, Bill, I actually, I went on a binge of supporting some artists I know on social media, and I picked up the actual book, and I'm working my way through it. And it's just, it's very much like you said, I call it a painted novel.
Yeah, almost. I love that, man.
Yeah, because it's just like, I wasn't sure what to expect, and then I start reading, I'm like, wow, this is a really, it feels like a really fresh approach to telling a story. So I think it is pretty awesome. Yeah,
I was really impressed, and that's why it's like I was so glad I had him on the show, and you know, so glad we've been talking and doing other things, which I'll talk about in a second. Yeah. As well, he's just so talented, great brain. So and I'll tell you where you could find him now: David Murdoch Art, and that's Murdoch, Murdoch, of course. But no, there's a lot of great stories to be told. And, you know, if you think about it, if you do have an idea and it's like, man, this would make a great movie, but am I scripted great in a contest, but, you know, no one wants to make it into a movie, it's like, think graphic novel. Think of hooking up with an artist, if you're not one yourself, who could bring it to life in amazing ways. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we were bouncing all over the wall with this show, Bill. Not unlike Roger Rabbit after drinking alcohol. So, you know.
As long as you only play patty cake with me, Johnny. I love Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That's brilliant. But, no, well, that's what happens when you have, like, you know, you do, like, every 50 shows, you do something bizarro, and it's like you have to cram in, like, what would be, like, 100 podcasts worth of information into one-hour show.
Yeah, I mean, there's like so many other people I could talk about, but you know what? If people want my recommendations, you know where to find me on social media. If you don't, I'll give you that information after Billy does the scream outs.
All right, and here we go with those scream outs. Speaking of like a comic book esque character, but on the horror realm, we're going to lead off with Bleeding Critic, who you can find on Twitter, and he does horror film reviews as well as original stories. Check him out at bleedingcritic.com, on YouTube at Scary Stories UK. And where is he? He's scuttling around inside your skull. He is amazing, an amazing narrator, an amazing actor, brings great stories. He's the one individual who could read from the phone book, if we still had them, and it would scare the shit out of you. Another writer of horror, Eddie J. Morales, who you could find on Twitter at Morales_EJ, horror author of short horror stories. He's in the paranormal, slasher, supernatural, zombies, and more. He's out of Florida. Enjoy the weather there, Eddie. And you could find him at eddiejosemorales.com. Don't miss him. Hallows School for the Dead. What's that? That's Hallows School on Twitter. An upcoming spooky MG, you know, mid-grade YA fiction fantasy horror novel series about a school for ghosts. How's that? They love Goodreads, paranormal, am reading, all that good stuff. And check them out and find more at hallowsschoolforthedead.com. I am pausing to take a sip of coffee because I know how this goes. I always try to enunciate this shit and my mouth goes dry. Here we go. Continued with Horror and Haunted. Page. Let's see. What the? A page I created for fans of horror and the paranormal, horror movie, paranormal, and weird news, art and photography, post to inspire creativity, out of Ohio by a lot of cornfields. But horror and haunted, you can get the link to their YouTube channel. Fantastic stuff. Don't miss it. Muse. Who is your muse? It better be Halo Gal 22 or Halo Gal. Did I say Halo? Halo.
You said Halo. Yeah,
I know. Halo Girl 22. Holy shit. I don't edit this show, but I wish I could right now. She's so beautiful and so intelligent and so amazing. She's the co-hostess of Scary Things Pod with, of course, Monster Mash Ken. If you don't know him, he's a big Raiders fan, probably still scratching his head over how the Falcons destroyed them this weekend. But I'm sure he will continue on, and he's very cool. He's the man behind Strange Podcast Network, which we are a part of.
Yes.
Strange Pod Net. The problem with this world is that too many mouths are open while too many eyes remain closed. How about that? I think she'll appreciate this show. She's out of Michigan, where the scarythingsare.com is the website. Go there now. Heather Ween 3, Season of the Wixen. How about that? Who's that? That is Miss Wixen herself, Heather Wixen, at The Hard Chick. She's the managing editor of Daily Dead News. Go there as well. Phenomenal. And she wrote for Monster Squad FX. And she's a special effects industry historian. And she's busy chasing down leads and practicing her non-regional diction. And you can find out more at HCA Critics. And she's out of North Hollywood. I am jealous beyond... I can't even... And go to her Twitter handle, at The Hard Chick, to learn more. A beautiful, wonderful, amazing, very talented. She does everything. She will even cook you a meal that will knock you out. I've seen the pictures. I haven't tasted the meal yet, but I hope to. You know who I'm talking about.
This
is Lisa Sorrentino at My Little Rascal 8, part of the hubby and wife team, Joey, the husband, making indie films, and they're doing a wonderful job of it. She's also a special effects makeup artist. Again, horror support indie film out of Lancaster, PA. Hope to see her and her husband when this is when the quarantine's
yes.
lifted.
Yes.
She's also on Facebook.com as My Little Rascal. And a lot of awards between the two of them making films. It came from 2020 is their latest. Not a horror movie, but a horrific topic, as we've all experienced.
Yeah.
Promote horror. Promote horror. We have been connected to them since 2013.
The beginning.
Yep, yeah. Since the beginning. When it like, and that was also with Bleeding Critic.
Yeah.
Since 2013, known both of these wonderful people, grown, helped, you know, promote each other's stuff, and rightfully so. I respect them as well, Omar and company at Promote Horror. Welcome to PromoteHorror.com, where we bring creators of horror and horror fans together. Our goal is to help spread the horror, which they do, through our promotions. They're out of Miami. They're near Eddie. And again, go to PromoteHorror.com. Our dear friend, supporter of the show, he's been on here, he will be on again. Johnny and I are going to go visit his master horror collection, the Great Palco Designs. Phenomenal. Well, he has also a phenomenal sister. Of course he would. Jen Palco. That is her handle on Twitter. As she says, I am me. I like to help people reinvent their reality. And she's an author and content creator. And she's also at Jen_Palco. Phenomenal stuff. And I'm not trashing New Age anything. Not at all. But it's like if something's bothering you, how to look at the world a little bit differently and help. She puts out these little great videos, and she's wonderful and amazing, very engaging personality. She's phenomenal. Definitely check her out. And finally, the man who we were speaking of at the end of the podcast, David Murdoch at David Murdoch Art on Twitter. He's an independent artist and writer. He is the creator of Lucas and Drag the Dead. Drag the Dead is an upcoming zombie video game. And I'm honored to say that David said, Bill, I'd like you to write the dialogue. So,
oh, man.
I know. Awesome. So other people were like, Bill, you're doing 8 million things. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm doing this first because it's awesome. So it's like, so we're going through that right now. He has some stuff on his on his page. Go to David Murdoch Art on Twitter. You'll see some of the material. It's fantastic. And he's also the creative director for INC Inc. ITZY, I-T-Z-Y. Just wanted to make sure I got that right. Great human being, great free thinker, passionate man, and he's cool as hell, and love working with him, and we'll see what things bring for him. He owns a comic book store. Like, I'm yes. like, I couldn't own a comic book store. It's like, wow, isn't that a rare piece? Yeah, and it's mine, and I'm not selling it. Dude, you don't sell anything in your store, you're going to go broke. I don't care. You know, like, I would totally lose my... I don't know how he does it. I would lose my friggin' mind. Yeah. But, so that's it. 350 episodes. Thanks to all of our fans and followers. You know, we're free. We don't ask for money. We don't want it. Well, we do want it, but we don't ask for it.
Give us money.
Please. No, we have made so many wonderful friends over the course of the 7 years doing this show. We used to do it weekly. We now do it bi-weekly because, like, I'm doing 8 million things. Johnny's writing a book and other stuff. And, you know, we have lives and we want to get laid, all that stuff. So, oh, did I say that? Oh, my God, that slipped. No, it didn't. Can't wait for the quarantine to be over. Anyway, I'm fine.
That's what she said.
Oh, man. Michael Scott makes an appearance. Nah, so thank you all for listening. We've heard the feedback's always been wonderful. I've just met so many great people, and we can't listing them all. I'd leave too many out and it would be insulting, but so we hope the scream outs go a little way in touching everybody and let them know that, you know, we're aware and, you know, we love you. I mean, I'm serious, Johnny and I, we only do scream outs to people that we like and care about. If you're a jerk, we're not doing it. So it's right. Like, that's pretty much it.
That is accurate. Yeah. And yeah, we're not getting any sort of kickback or anything for these scream outs. So there's also
exactly.
That.
And it's funny, like my company says all the time, we have a no asshole policy. And I'm like, that's just like the last knock in Crash Palace. That's it.
Yeah. You know, Bill, I mean, just an observation is that to what you said, we do this for free. And obviously if we didn't like doing it, we would have stopped doing it a long time ago. And that's, I mean, true. that's why I keep writing for you, man, because, you know, I know there's no money, but I know you'll let me post whatever I want to post, you know, long as I can, you know, and I really, to me, that's huge. That's of huge value to me as a quote unquote artist. So, yeah,
man, that's, and now that, you know, Suze Layton. Susan Layton is also on. It's funny, like I was telling you, I put together, I had two articles from you, two articles from her. I read them and I had to add a comma. One comma in four articles, and I've had other people send me stuff and it's like, this is going to take me days. So it's like, your writing's phenomenal. I appreciate your insight and the depth. So I can't thank you enough. And
I think I've gotten to this point, Bill, where it's like, actually, I think I've been like this for a long time. It's just, I want to make as little work for the person I'm sending it to as possible. That's just my mentality toward it.
I like that, Johnny. I like that.
I figured you would. A lot. Yeah.
And besides that, ladies and gentlemen, you can continue to find The Last Knock on Spotify, iTunes, about 30 other places. Forgive me, I'm not going to rattle them all off. And also at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links not only to the show, but also to articles by Johnny and Susan, as also Har Pixie, Kim McDonald, R.S. Broska, Randy, phenomenal. He hasn't written for us in a long time. And also D.
D.
And what is her handle now on Twitter?
Oh.
It's no longer DMLMs. It's Virgo.
Virago Ergo Sum, I believe.
Virago Ergo Sum. You could follow her. She's, what a brain. Holy shit, what a mind. And
she's very engaging, yeah.
And Paul J. Williams.
Yeah, love Paul. Yeah.
Love Paul. I love him. Hope to see him again soon. Miss him.
He's a great writer and a great mind too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you could follow me at Crash Palace on Twitter, all lowercase, and also at noir kink for my kink noir crime thriller LGBTQ erotic series mixed genre thing, which is now all award winning. So I'm really, I can't believe it, man. It's like, that was my life's dream. It's like, I want to publish a book. I got it. So it's like, so everything else is gravy now. So,
and you're fucking in the midst of a series, man. That's especially awesome. Yeah.
Yep. And before the show, I finished chapter one of book four, and I'm also taking notes for book five, and we'll see where it continues to go.
That's awesome, man.
What about you, Johnny? Where can people find you and your stuff?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Num. There are no H's in those Johnnies, but there are B's in the Nums. And you can find my stuff, like Billy said, at CrashPalaceProductions.com because he's a good guy. After 7 years, he's entertained my nonsense. So.
Oh, my God. No, it's not. I mean, it's a shame. If anyone's looking for a film critic of extraordinary caliber, it's Johnny. He gets into depth. No, I'm serious, man. I read people, read my review of, like, whatever. It was good, and, like, the character did stuff, and here's the plot, and watch it. It's like, what the frig was that? You know? And it's like, you don't do that. You don't do that. A lot of depth, a lot of, you know, you look at the themes, you go really deep into the narrative, and that's what I want in a review. And I want depth. Uh-oh. You booped.
Sorry.
Johnny booped out again. We got the boop boop.
Out again.
Yes, we got the boop boop. So on that note, where can people... did you do that already?
I already did that. It's okay, Bill. It fits that we would have technical difficulties on our 350th episode, so I apologize.
Yeah, thank you, Skype. Actually, we love Skype, so we're not complaining. So give them a scream out, too.
I'm giving Skype the shove it notion right now. You can't see it, but...
wow. Okay, cool. on that note, I'm going to go read a comic book.
Sounds good, Bill. You know, never compromise even in the face of Armageddon.
I won't. It's too late. It doesn't matter.
That's true. We're pretty much fucked.
Yeah, pretty much fucked. All right, buddy. Have a good one.
All right. See you, Bill.
Bye.